from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. Ethnic diversity is on the rise in the U.S., so why are children's books still so white? Only about 6% of kids' books published in 2013 feature characters that are African American, Latino, Asian, or Native American. Forum takes up the discussion with authors, illustrators, and librarians. Does the ethnicity of characters in children's books matter to you? Join us for Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio, welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. Among 3,200 children's books published last year, just 93 were about African Americans. That's according to a study by the Cooperative Children's Book Center at the University of Wisconsin. Only about 6% of books even featured a character of color, including Latinos, Asian Americans, or Native Americans. Why? And what's the value of having more books about kids of color? We're joined by a panel of authors, illustrators, and an Oakland librarian. But first, I spoke last week with Katie Horning, the director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It looks every year at how many children's books either feature a character of color or are written or illustrated by people of color. I asked Ms. Horning, what was the breakdown by race of those 3,200 books?
Of those books, of those 3,200, 67 were by African Americans, 18 were by American Indians, 90 were by Asian Pacific or Asian Pacific Americans, and 48 were by Latinos. And what we count are books that are written and or illustrated by those specific groups.
Yeah, for the past decade, it does look like there's been a bit of a decline in books for Latinos, even Asian Americans, African Americans, and American Indians. Do you have a sense of why the numbers seem to be plateauing or declining?
We don't have any specific answers as to why that is, but I have a theory. And my theory is I think we started to see a change when school and public libraries began to lose funding for purchasing books for children. And that's something that's happened across the board in the United States, a loss of funding for school and public libraries. And it used to be, when I started out in the field many years ago, in the early 1980s, libraries were the primary market for children's and young adult trade books. Once the school and public library market began to decline, the significant market became bookstores. And there is this notion among many of the big box bookstores in particular that multicultural literature doesn't sell.
So it doesn't sound like you're saying that it's a reflection that there are fewer authors who want to write about minority children.
Well, you know, we don't know who isn't getting published. My sense is that there were probably people out there who could be nurtured, who could be discovered. There are some publishing companies who've started contests to try to find authors, new voices. There's a small press called Lee & Lowe that has a contest for new writers. It's called New Voices.
What counts as a book about minorities? I understand they don't have to be the main character, but they have to figure significantly. What does figure significantly mean?
My colleague Jenny Moore Cruz and I have both served on the Coretta Scott King Award Committee. That experience was helpful in helping define what was significant cultural content in a book for children that was about, in that case, about African Americans. The Coretta Scott King Award goes to an African American author or illustrator, and in addition, the books have to reflect some aspect of African American culture or heritage. There are a number of books that feature, and I'm just using African American children as an example in this case, there are books that feature African American children that don't have any outward cultural content. And an example of that is The Snowy Day by Ezra Jack Keats. And we actually, we would count a book like A Snowy Day as being a book about an African-American child. I think that it's important for all children to see images of themselves in books, and I think it's important for all children to see a diverse world. So for a child to have a book where a character looks like him, such as Snowy Day with an African-American child, I think that those kinds of things are important, and that's what we count.
You mentioned something earlier that I wanted to get back to, which is you said that, you know, books about minorities don't sell. What did you mean by that?
That's not a statement that I would make myself, but I have heard quoted from, for example, buyers in some of the chain bookstores that they're not interested in stocking multicultural books because they don't think they sell. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, of course, because if they don't have the books in their stores, who can buy them? And I think that one of the really wonderful things about the children's book field is that we have awards that matter, that make a difference in sales. And so when a book wins, for example, the Newbery or the Caldecott Medal or the Coretta Scott King Award, that gives the book increased visibility. I think that, you know, every year there are books that are published because publishers hope to win one of those awards. If we didn't have the award system at all, I'm not sure what the publishing field would look like, but they really do help to raise the quality of the books overall.
That was Katie Horning, director of the Cooperative Children's Book Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, which looks at how many children's books are by or about people of color. Let's turn now to our panel. We're joined by Nina Lindsay, the supervising librarian for children's services at Oakland Public Library. She served as a judge on the Newbery Award Selection Committee in past years, and she also co-authors the Mock Newbery Award blog, Heavy Metal, about potential book candidates on the School Library Journal site. This year, she's chairing the Boston Globe Horn Book Awards. Welcome, Nina Lindsay.
Hi.
Mitali Perkins, the author of both children's and young adult books, including Rickshaw Girl, Monsoon Summer, and The Not-So-Star-Spangled Life of Sunita Sen. Mitali Perkins, welcome to Forum.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And we're joined by Lei Win Pham, a children's book illustrator whose books include Grace for President, Freckle-Faced Strawberry, and Alvin Ho, allergic to camping, hiking, and other natural disasters. Welcome, Lei Win Pham.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us on the phone from New York is Christopher Myers. He won a Caldecott honor and is a Coretta Scott King Award winner. Both he and his father, longtime children's book author Walter Dean Myers, wrote opinion pieces in the New York Times on this very topic. And Christopher Myers, let's start with you. In your New York Times piece, you talk about an apartheid of children's literature, where you see characters of color limited to historical books on civil rights or slavery, and not given the chance to be part of stories about imagination and adventure. And you write this as two effects. What are those effects?
One of the effects is that what I've realized is that children's books are this amazing forum in which we talk about some of the issues that are central to our nation. So we have this understanding of what a good citizen is, how one can participate in a society, what our society should look like. And this comes from these early, early narratives that we give our children. So, for example, with these two effects, on one hand, we say that our society need not be multicultural, that when a little kid in Idaho looks at the books in front of him and he gets, or her, and he sees that the world that is created in these books is not a world that is necessarily diverse, then when he looks out into his actual world and he sees diversity, he begins to think that something is wrong. If, on the other hand, and this is the other effect, if he looks into the mirror and he sees that he doesn't fit into the world that has been outlined for him, then he also is seeing that something is wrong, but that something is wrong is in fact his own skin, is his own self. And I think that it works for any number of kids in our population, that we are making a picture of a nation that is ceasing to exist. I mean, the idea of the United States as a monoculture is long gone, but in our books, in our narratives about nation that we create for our children, we have made this perhaps a 1950s version of America that really doesn't exist anymore.
So it almost sounds like you're saying these books, children's books, give kids sort of a map, a sense of their place in the world and what their options are. And when you limit those, it limits them?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there is this idea on one hand that we should give books that Katie talked about, that we should give books to kids so that the books have characters that look like themselves. But more than that, I think that we need to understand that kids aspire. Kids aren't always looking for themselves. They're looking for what they will be. And we are telling them in these books what is possible for them to be. And if they're not there in the books, then we're saying maybe perhaps that they don't have any possibility.
And Mitali Perkins, you tackle big issues in your children's books like erosion or microcredit, like in your book Rickshaw Girl. Are you trying to expand young people's perceptions of what they can accomplish?
I think I'm not underestimating children. I think a lot of times we think children don't have the capacity with their hearts and minds to get around some of these big issues. But in my travels, I've seen kids who really do care and who want to learn. And I feel the childhood is the best time to connect them with some of the larger issues in the world, justice issues. It's a really great time to introduce kids so that their hearts are wide open, their minds are wide open, and best of all, their imaginations are wide open.
So do you agree with the premise then that children of color are underrepresented in children's books that are being published today?
I think we've made some strides. But again, I think KT put it really well, the change in the market. When I first started writing, I started writing books featuring brown girls like me because I didn't see them growing up. But what's been interesting to me is seeing these girls like Chris said, from Idaho or from rural Minnesota who write to me and say, I am exactly like your main character, Asha from India, set in 1970s India. And I think, wow, that she made that connection that maybe the gatekeepers didn't expect her to make, that affiliation with a character that was so other than herself. But isn't that true for fiction in general? And we read like that as adults, and I think children do also.
And Lei Win Pham, do you also see the market as playing a role in dictating what books are published and what kinds of illustrations you're asked to provide for these books?
You know, from personal experience, I can't say that that's ever something that I've felt. In fact, I seem to sort of get the opposite. When I first started getting manuscripts, I would just automatically put a person of color in without even thinking about it, whether or not the manuscript called for it, whether or not it was intended, whether the editor asked for it. It just was a natural fit for me. And I never got called back from any of the editors to say that wasn't quite what we were picturing. And it just continued in such a way that now, Christopher, I remember reading an article that you had written about children's books being either a reflection of modern society or an ideal of modern society, and which angle do you choose to go? And I think I've always approached children's books as the ideal society, the society that I would like to see. That I think that picture books is where I operate, and it's not young readers where there's more of abstract thinking that goes on with picture books. I'm able to almost have them as a fresh palette, and they don't have any prejudices yet. They don't have any extremities in their thinking. And so when I create something, I'm creating sort of a universal image that I hope any child can look at and relate to. And I have to say that in my experience, I've never had an editor fight me on it. And in fact, I think most of my best-selling books have been books that feature children of color.
And Christopher Myers, you're an illustrator as well. Do you think there is more freedom for illustrators to put forward characters that are multicultural than there is for writers?
I think that there's definitely a power to the image and an ease to the image that perhaps writers, as a writer, you don't have to face. So when I illustrate and I put a brown face in, I put a face in that wasn't necessarily the one that was expected, let's say, I find that there is a way in which the baggage or the history that some editors may bring to that to that image, they don't bring, they don't necessarily bring it. They can't say, well, okay, I wouldn't, this kid wouldn't look like that. That's a much harder thing for them to say. But one of the things that I'm interested in is, take, for example, Lewin Pham's work, which I love. Interested in why more people are not, more editors are not eagerly looking at some of, let's say, Lewin's other work. So Lewin's got a beautiful series of drawings of Vietnam on her website. And I love this work. This work is subtle, it's beautiful, and yet I've yet to see, there are very few books published in the United States about other countries. In this country made of immigrants, in this country made of people from all over the world, somehow we're stuck on a kind of America that is fairly suburban, fairly rural. It's rarely urban, especially in the picture book world. And these are the more subtle kind of issues that face an illustrator that may or may not face a writer, but they're still there. If I were an editor, I would be beating down Le Win's door saying, hey, look at these drawings that you've done in Vietnam. Could we turn this into a book? Because they're subtle, they're beautiful, they're rich, they're the kind of stories that would enrich a child's life. Yet, these are the books that are harder somehow to publish.
Wow. Christopher, you're like now my number one fan, and I'm now your number one fan. Thank you so much. You know, I'll have to say that the idea of writing actually about my own culture, it is something that I actually have had an editor or a few editors interested in it. And I think that's in that particular case, it's something where for me, the story is king. And I want to make sure that what it is that I'm communicating is authentic and genuine. And it's my own inhibitions as a writer. But I think, and I can't say that my experience is common, I think it might be very specific to me and a group of my friends, that there does seem to be a bit of a hunger for more multiracial stories, particularly in the graphic novel industry. I don't know that I can speak for every other industry, but I do have a friend, an editor from First Second Books. They publish books by Jean-Wen Yang and who he's actively searching for these stories, but for him, it's not that, oh, you're Asian American, I want you to write a story. It's, you've got a story and it's interesting and story is king. And if that story happens to exist in, you know, 17th century China or 19th century the United States or Harlem, that's what's important to him, is that the story is more powerful than the era that it's written in. And a part of me loves to see this diversity, and a part of me also agrees that I want to hear the story because it is just an amazing story to be told.
We're discussing why there are few people of color in children's books and few people of color writing and illustrating kids' books. A 2013 study from the Cooperative Children's Book Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison showed only about 6% of kids' books published in 2013 featured characters that were African-American, Latino, Asian, or Native American. So we're talking about how we're starting to see some more interest in this, but why isn't it translating in terms of the numbers? Do you have a thought about that, Mitali Perkins?
It's interesting because before The Hunger Games came out, there was this premise that boys wouldn't read girl books. And that The Hunger Games shattered that, because not only did boys read The Hunger Games, but men were reading The Hunger Games on the BART train. And so there's this need for there's this need for a breakthrough story that will capture the cultural imagination. And I'm really hopeful that some storytellers will come through for that's a story that's featuring a character of color, as Chris said, that is an adventure story that captures the whole imagination of the culture. And that, you know, we can, if when that happens, when the money comes, then the markets open up wide. So I'm really eager to see a whole generation of young storytellers take some risks and try for that kind of a story, and not just stay in the safe, narrow places where multicultural authors have been traditionally, but take some real risks in storytelling and maybe capture the national imagination in a way that will change that myth as well.
What about Christopher Myers?
The idea for me is that we are constantly struggling underneath the myth of the market. So there is this idea, as Mitali points out, that boys won't read girl books, or white kids won't read books about Asian Americans, or any number of myths of the market. And constantly we are surprised by the market. You know, the people who are the gatekeepers of the market, our publishers, our marketing executives, they are just as surprised as we are quite often. And I think that to use the market as an excuse of why we're not going to publish this story or that story is sad, just because we are constantly being surprised by this mythical beast, the market, that is looking out at us and deciding all of our fates as storytellers.
And Nina Lindsay, what do you see as a librarian in terms of demand for these types of multicultural books? So if we're being surprised in the market by the interest, right, in certain books, are you also seeing that translated into requests for specific books, say, about Latino children in the library?
Well, we always have, but we see the demand in the community. So we don't necessarily wait either for the request from the public for a book about Latino community. We're trying to always put that in front of our community and have our collections reflect their needs. The demand has always been there. This discussion, when the CCBC started collecting these statistics in the 1990s, it was exactly the same discussion and exactly the same myth. And the children's book market has changed a lot since then. So there might be different levers that exist now, but I'm still not sure exactly what is carrying this myth forward. Actually, K.T. Horning pointed this out to the myth that white kids won't read books about kids of color. Well, why do we expect kids of color to read books about white kids all the time? I think we've created kind of a fallacy about a self-fulfilling prophecy about what children's books are supposed to be or what kids respond to. And part of that may also be emblematic in the awards that we select. We still have awards like the Coretta Scott King Award, but the Newbery and Caldecott Award, which are kind of the classic gold stickers that go on the front of those books, they have recognized authors and illustrators of color over the years. But to go back to Chris's point, if you look at the last 10 or 15 years even of the Caldecott winners, only a handful of books that were honored are about people of color, and they're all by Kadir Nelson or Brian Collier, and they're all about historical figures. And I think that in itself says something about this is what makes a good book with a person of color in it. And those medals sell books, and that's the money talking to.
We'll continue our conversation about the role of children of color in kids' books after a short break. Do you see books featuring people of color for your kids? Why or why not? If more children's books about people of color were published, would you buy them? Do you think it's important for your child's ethnicity to be reflected in a book? If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. We're talking about a 2013 study from the Cooperative Children's Book Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison showing only about 6% of kids' books published in 2013 featured characters that were African American, Latino, Asian, or Native American. I'm Mina Kim, and today for Michael Krasny. Do give us a call and stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. We're discussing people of color in children's books and people of color writing and illustrating kids' books. Let's hear what our listeners have to say. Susan writes, hello, there's a wonderful picture book titled The Barber's Cutting Edge. The characters are those you might find in an African-American barbershop where a young customer tries to stump the barber who always seems to know the meaning of all the words the boy is studying in school. The cutting edge is a giant dictionary in the back room of the barbershop. The illustrations are beautiful, rich drawings, and the book is probably good for kids in grades 1 to 3. And actually, Susan reminds me that we should mention we've posted some of our guests' recommendations for children's books featuring people of color on our website at kqed.org/forum, so you can check that out. Mark writes, "This is a timely show. I'm an author and white, but have written a series of children's books about a Japanese-American boy named Haruki. As authors, we are supposed to be good at reaching out with our imaginations, and this should include imagining the lives of characters that are different than us, in addition to encouraging writers from underrepresented groups or viewpoints to share their stories." And he brings up an interesting point. Mitali, I wonder, you know, how important is it that a book about a child of color be written by a person of color? I mean, can a non-Indian, for example, write an Indian person? Well,
I think I would hate to set up any kind of apartheid in who can tell a story. Fiction, by definition, crosses borders. Otherwise, it's memoir, right? So we're all crossing borders all the time. And I would hate to say, no, you know, you can't cross that border to tell the story. If you're a white guy, you want to write about an Indian girl, and you're doing your research and you've taken the time to develop your empathy and your imagination, I would say probably write it. Now, the only exception would be in traditionally marginalized or oppressed groups of people like Indian Native Americans and Black African Americans. I think in those two cases where there have been a narrower place for stories to be told from within the community, I would ask the white author, why are you telling this story? Is there someone else who can maybe tell it if you didn't tell it from within the community? And I might myself hold back from writing those stories because they've been traditionally silenced from telling their own stories for so many generations that it's really time to, I think, hold back in that case. I wouldn't like to see British authors maybe telling the Indian story because of that history. So I think history has something to do with who can tell a story for whom.
Christopher Myers, Macaulay,
as an African-American, please write a story about African-American
style. All right, Chris.
This, I don't want anyone telling me what I can and cannot write. And I don't dare to tell anyone else what they can and cannot write. And as Le Guin said, it's really about following the story. And if you tell a story honestly and openly and in a real kind of way with a sympathy for your characters, I don't think that you can go wrong, because I do trust the art more than I trust anything else. I trust the art and the beauty of storytelling. I'm working on a young adult novel now about Joan of Arc because I'm equally concerned with the diversity of the role of young women in YA novels and the way that we depict young women as always having these Wuthering Heights problems of which boy to choose, the good one or the bad one. And I'm interested in the idea that, you know, young women have problems that are much more interesting than which boy to choose. And I have absolutely no overlap in my Venn diagram with Joan of Arc. I am neither French, a 14-year-old, 15-year-old girl. I'm not from the year 1380 or so. Yeah, all of these things would definitely kind of rule me out, I guess, as a person to write about her. But I think that as someone who is interested in struggles, as someone who's interested in, you know, colonial struggles, to mention your British Indian metaphor, you know, here's this young girl trying to kick out the English, and I'm always down for that.
The only exception, Natalie, I would be Perkins. Happy to write a book about a young African-American boy growing up in Brooklyn, Chris, but the only problem I see is we're so accessible now to kids via the web and also via school visits that if I were to walk into a school in Nina's community as an author of that book, or you were to walk in, the kids in her classes would respond in the same way that you pointed out in your New York Times article to you walking in. They can imagine themselves as a storyteller in you because they see their race reflected in you in a way they couldn't with me. So that adds storytelling is such a powerful act that in that case, I would say seeing their reflection in the story as well as in the creator of the story does have some meaning and impact.
You know, this discussion also brings up the question for me, though, of can kids of color relate to, say, white characters? If the story is well written, it's lively, you know, what stops or why is it so important for them to be reflected if they can also relate to a story, say, about a character that doesn't reflect their race or ethnicity? Christopher Myers, did you want to comment on that?
Yes. I think, first of all, you know, there is a false dichotomy that's often set up when people have this discussion about multicultural literature, dichotomizing the classics from these new classics that we're proposing that need to be created. But for me personally, of course, I was able to identify with the sensitivity of Stephen Dedalus in A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, or even the quirky drawingness of The Little Prince. These, you know, or Harriet the Spy, you know, Harriet the Spy was my girl, you know, and just it's not simply about this idea of mirroring, though it is about the idea that if we're going to claim to be an industry that is about imagination, that is about the fostering of good and interesting storytelling, how can then our imaginations be so segregated? How can then our imaginations be so narrow? So I think that kids of color should and will continue to read good stories. Good stories live no matter where they are, no matter whose face is on them. Good stories will live. But at the same time, don't you feel like that there are good stories that have my face? I think that there are, and I think that they need to be told.
And let's go to more of your calls. Andrea in Oakland, or Mira in, I'm sorry, Andrea in, Mira in Berkeley. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. I have actually co-authored books for children, which were published in India, and I also review books, multicultural books, on a wonderful magazine called In Culture Parent, and I constantly read these diverse books to my children. And one thing that I notice is that most of these stories, which have children of color, are always set in the context of an issue, like, say, poverty or a historical event or a story on racism, which is really great. But at the same time, I think our ideal goal or a dream should be to have ordinary stories, very simple, regular, fun children's stories in which the child just happens to be of color. It's a great start to have these stories, stronger stories, but we also need to be conscious of where we want to eventually get, where the color is not the highlight of the story and is not centered around the aspect of color, but the child of color just happens to be there. So this is one thing that I often think about when I read these great stories, but then I feel sad that the color aspect is what is being highlighted in the story itself. So hopefully someday we'll have, like, ordinary stories in which, like, the children are just Asian Americans or American Indians or, like, Native Americans, but it's just, like, an everyday matter-of-fact thing story.
Nina Lindsay, I see you nodding.
Yes. Mira, this is something I think, this is what Chris was talking about, and it's something that we're always looking for in the libraries, too. And mm-hmm. we often find, if we are trying to bring books to someone with their faces in it, often what we've got is historical fiction or an issues-related mm-hmm. book. And I think it goes back to the idea of how your reader connects with your story and the point of telling a story. Fiction is a true story because it connects with the reader in some way. So just as the white girl from the Midwest was able to connect with a character in Mitali's book, the race shouldn't matter in the reader making the connection. But having the races reflected in the body of the literature is what we're really looking for. And as a caution to writers who are trying to make sure that they put people of color in their books, I would just say, how are you inserting this character and why? One of the things that we find really problematic in a lot of books is tokenism, especially in fiction, where you'll be reading a story and suddenly a character is introduced with the color of their skin and they're a person of color and nobody else has been introduced in this way. And it's really awkward, and that takes a reader right out of this story. I've just finished a fabulous vampire novel of 400 pages long, and on page 200, a side character gets introduced as Latino. That's the only time race or color or anything is alluded to in the book, and it just ruined the effect.
Lewin Pham, I also see you nodding over there. You've had an experience similar to this?
I've always rejected manuscripts that do ring up tokenism. That's a flag that just I don't want to be put into a position simply because I'm a person of color. I should illustrate this person of color book. There's a series of books that I do called Alvin Ho, which you mentioned, which just incidentally the character happens to be Chinese, and you know the things that he mentions happen in a Chinese family, but it's written in such a way that everybody, it could be anybody. And I can't tell you how many children come up to me and tell me, I love this character. From all races, they all find something to relate. And I remember when I picked up that book, I remember wondering, are you giving this to me because I'm Asian? And quickly reading it through, I realized, no, it's, as again, story is king, and it was just a fabulous story to be told. But there was one comment I wanted to make about what Nina had mentioned about the Caldecott winners, Kadir Nelson winning, you know, for Moses. And I do believe, I love those books. They are fabulous paintings, and I buy them for me. Not for my children, because my children aren't terribly interested in it. For my children, I'll buy books like Kadir's latest book, which is, I forgot the title, but it's about a teddy bear, because that's what my kid likes. But it's not simply because it was Kadir Nielsen and I wanted to buy it. It was simply because it was a book that I knew that they enjoyed. So there's a weird, I don't know if, Chris, you experienced this too, but as an illustrator, I'll actively go out and find books simply for the art and look for people of color for the art because I'm curious to know how are people portraying themselves. But it's not necessarily something that that my children would want to pick up and read. It's just something that I myself am interested in.
But in terms of when you're actually doing illustrations, right, and let's say that this exists in terms of tokenism exists in terms of images, do you find that you get requests to include children of color in your images and to make them more stereotypically a person of color?
Yes, that's actually happened to me a few times. And it's frustrating because I don't think I need to be told in any way to include children of color. And it's something I do very naturally without thinking about. So when someone suggests me to put it in, there's a frustration on my part that I think if a child is looking at that picture and wondering, you know, and they can't see themselves in just the actions of the characters as opposed to, you know, the color of their hair, the color of their skin, that I'm doing something wrong on my part. And as a storyteller, you're doing something wrong if you feel you need to include children in that way. There's something very false about that I can't advocate and that I'm not very willing to do willingly in my artwork. It has to flow naturally.
Mitali Perkins.
It's complicated with writers because we don't have the ability to cast by illustration. And so when you want to include a diverse cast of characters because the plot or the setting require it, then how do you label those characters? I used to think more maybe leave it up to the person's imagination, the reader's imagination. But you run against something called white default, which I really kind of was skeptical about until the Hunger Games movie was cast. The Hunger Games books explicitly describes the character of Rue as African-American with satiny dark skin. When she was cast as an African-American, there was this big outcry in the fan base, like, she's not black. She's explicitly in the book described as black. But the fan base had done white default in their heads, even when she was explicitly described as black. And that really threw me, because I thought, if we're operating against white default, then we have to figure out a way to be proactive about labeling. And then how do you do that without being tokenist?
Well, the question is, how do you do it in your own life? Is what I find. Because I rarely have ever, I don't identify my friends as being, hey, that Latino guy. But at the same time, there are lots of other incidental information that come out, from names to, you know, I think that this is, again, about being a close observer, which you are, which I've seen in your work, Mitali. But there is a difference between writing that comes from close observation and from reflection of the reality of most of us in this country at this point, in which there are people of color around all the time, and you do see folks. And, you know, there's no injunction on language. There's just an injunction on bad observation. There's just an injunction on bad storytelling. And as Nina points out, there are moments where you're like, oh, this is just bad storytelling, when all of a sudden somebody walks in and you say, a strapping Asian American young man. You know, all of a sudden
at
you're
least
like,
he's strapping.
Where's your sense of language? And again, I really do believe that, you know, this idea of story is king is really important.
And let's go to more of your calls. Nadia in Berkeley.
Hi. I'm so excited to be part of this conversation. You all have all made some really good points. I'm calling sort of in two parts. So one is that I am a teacher who supports people learning to be teachers of young children. And we spend a lot of time talking about the importance of finding really good literature for very young children that looks and reflects them. And they are definitely challenged finding good stories. And so in terms of the importance of it, absolutely we need it. The other piece I wanted to add is I'm a parent of biracial children, one infant and one 12-year-old. And my son, who's a 12-year-old, loves to read, and he, after about age 5, couldn't really find, action stories and things like that that reflected him as a person of color, as a boy of color. There's like one series that I know where the characters are purposefully children who are mixed race. And so I just feel like he has a craving for being able to find stories that are not about slavery, not about the civil rights movement, not about a terrible, horrible thing, just a story.
Mm-hmm. And Nadia, can you tell us what the name of that series is?
I could, if I could remember it. Oh, Amy Hodgepodge.
Yeah, that's good.
Is the name of the series. And it's about a little, like a second grade girl, and her friends are a variety of mixed race children. And it's about, dynamics of second grade stuff. But they do talk about, well, what is it like when people don't know what to call you and what to do with your hair? And some of that stuff was meaningful for him at that age. And there's nothing like that we can find right now. And so I feel frustration as an educator, and I feel frustration as a parent. And you all have brought up some fabulous points.
Nadia, thanks. Adriana writes, if people of color want more children's books featuring their children, they should publish them. Publishing houses are no longer the gatekeepers to what gets published. An independent author can hire a graphic designer at an affordable price to lay out a children's book in a format that can be uploaded to Amazon for Kindle, to Google Play Books for Android, and to iTunes Books for iPad. The cost of uploading the books to these platforms is zero. Yes, it is hard work to promote a book on social media and in parenting forums and in librarian forums once it is digitally published, but is no harder than sending the manuscript out to countless publishers and enduring the heartache of countless rejections. So, are there ways to push back on the publishing industry in the sense that publishing is changing? Mitali, I see you nodding.
Yes, it's a hopeful time for writers because social media is all about content, and we are content creators. And so if we can showcase our voice, I feel like it's revolutionized my career. People used to think of me as a multicultural author that wrote about issues books. But on Twitter, on Facebook, I can showcase that, hey, I can be funny. And I can talk about lots of other things. And I think it's extended my reach into a wider audience. It's true for published authors who are traditionally published as well as self-published authors. We really have to get our voice out there, and we have the means to do so. So I do think it's an exciting time to find that yet unknown person who's going to write that blockbuster story that's going to capture our imagination. I do think that's a very strong possibility. I personally love the editing process, the traditional. I have wonderful editors, and I really need that back and forth of great editors that don't work for me, that work for someone else. So I do appreciate traditional publishing as well, but I think it's great to have let the stories come, whatever the venue, and let's see what people get excited about.
Christopher Myers, what about you? You talk a lot about the market and also in your New York Times piece. I mean, do you see some ways that folks are pushing back against sort of the idea of the market?
I very much see hope in other media, actually. When you look at film franchises in which, again, this idea of the surprise market, the market that no one knew was there all of a sudden appears. I'm not a big fan of Tyler Perry movies, but they really did demonstrate that there was a market for a certain kind of black film that was not being addressed. And all of a sudden now we've got scads of them, and we've got The Best Man 9, and we've got, so there are other media, I often see this sort of push against the market. But at the same time, and the two arguments that I've been hearing around this discussion, the one is this idea of like, well, what about the classics, which I'm being really clear is a false dichotomy. I believe in the classics. I love all of them. And then the other one is, can't we now just self-publish? And as much as I do think that social media has opened up a world for so many authors and illustrators, I also do believe that I know that if it were left up to me, I would love to just create. I'd love to make my books, to write my books, to make my illustrations. That is, and I've gotten better at that over the years. I think I started out okay. I think I'm getting better every day. If I had to then spend all of this other time, being the marketing department, the publicity department, the printing department, these books are a massive undertaking. It's like saying, can you make a film with just your cell phone and Final Cut Pro? Yes, you can. I'm not saying that you can't do that, but I'm saying that it's going to be quite hard to compete against the Hunger Games with their budget of $20 million when I've got, I mean, I love my Samsung G3, but it's not going to match up to a Red camera, to a team of editors, to a team of sound designers. And similarly, you know, with these books, let's not kid ourselves and think that self-publishing is somehow a panacea. We want to not only be self-publishing, I'm not against self-publishing, but we want to take this conversation about what our nation is, and we want to be part of this larger conversation. It's not just a niche group that we're trying to feed. We're trying to feed a famine in our nation.
Well, Stephen writes, I'm really enjoying this discussion. I have an idea in my head for a book, not a children's book, that at its core requires a racially diverse cast. But I feel pretty intimidated by the idea of trying to write such a cast and figuring out how to make them reflect their cultures without accidentally being stereotypical or racially insensitive. Any suggestions?
Yes, that's a tough one, Stephen. I'm glad that even you're asking that question. For a long time, I had friends who weren't even asking that question. Primarily, I would say those characters have to exist in your imagination first. You have to know them so well in your own imagination before you sit down to write that you know their backstories. And, you know, I had a friend who was writing a story set in some 4-H community, and he introduced a character called Shakisa or something like that, and he talked about her beaded braids. And so I said, what's she doing in that community? And he said, oh, I don't know. I just wanted to have a diverse cast of characters. And that wasn't a good enough reason. He didn't know her well enough, what she's her backstory. So I'd say primarily do your work in your imagination, do your work in your research, and then I'd say be bold. If none of us are trying this because we're so scared of making mistakes, I've made plenty of mistakes in my own books. And I feel we need to learn from each other as a community of storytellers, take the risks, do the best that we can do. There's a lot of stuff out there, guides to help you write race, to write culture. But if you don't try it, and you don't make your particular set of mistakes, I'm not going to learn from you, and you're not going to learn from me.
Peggy writes, I don't think it's been emphasized enough that white kids need to see diversity, too. By not representing the whole of the world's ethnicities as part of contemporary society, we are recreating the other and the paradigm of white is normal, intelligent, competent. In other words, we are teaching prejudice. I think Peggy raises an interesting point. We've talked a lot about the benefits to children of color of seeing themselves reflected in books, of broadening their sense of their options. But what are the benefits for everybody else or for those who are not specifically a minority that's reflected in a book? Do you want to speak to some of that? I think when I read your father's New York Times piece, Christopher Myers, he talked a lot about how somebody who was hiring a chemist had never had the experience of seeing an African-American chemist. So even though there was a resume that, you know, was showing that this person had the skill set to be one, he just couldn't put that together. Do you want to touch on how other people can benefit, white kids can benefit from books about children of color?
Well, I think one of the most obvious ways in which white kids benefit, and I don't even mean white kids, I mean American kids,
right. Mm-hmm.
Can benefit, is to understand that we live within a world. You know, America's a strange place because we are made of immigrants, made of people who have come from all over the world, and yet so many Americans, I think it's like 30% of Americans have passports. Are able to travel or even think about traveling outside of the borders of the United States. People don't know that there are other countries in the world, and I think that we give our children a disadvantage by creating a world for them that isn't as the world actually is. The world is broad, it's rich, it has a diverse number of experiences. We want our children to be prepared for their global economy. We want our children to be able to be fine wherever they are. I mean, the Bay Area is special in that way where, you know, you'll have random brother from Oakland talking about, yo, man, the best pho spot, I'm talking about my favorite pho spot, is hella good pho over at...
Oh, pretty good.
You know, which is one of the beautiful things about the Bay Area is that it does have this consciousness of other cultures. But, you know, that's something that I want to give to children all across the United States.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting that in many ways, kids' books are the way that infants are first introduced to another world. Nina, you're nodding vigorously.
Yes, just that the books are the way that kids throughout their learning experience are introduced to other cultures and different worldviews. And it's also that time when you're an infant and a toddler and a preschooler is when you're learning prejudice. And if you and the reverse. So if you can't see the world in the books in front of you, what kind of a world are we creating? And I really think it's the charge of the adults who are sharing the books with these children to try to think outside our own comfort zones. Now I'm speaking to really a white profession of librarians and teachers, which is maybe a different aspect of part of the problem, that we have to be comfortable with being passionate about books that are outside of our own tastes and experience. And I don't think that it's through interacting with adults around books that children learn this.
And we've posted our guest recommendations for children's books featuring people of color on our website at kqed.org/forum. But before the hour closes, I'd love to get your recommendations of the top two books that you would recommend to readers that feature characters of color. And I'll go ahead and start with you, Nina Lindsay.
I always start with a librarian, right? One of my favorite picture books from last year is Nino Wrestles the World by Yuji Morales, with a little toddler in Lucha Libre, and One Crazy Summer by Rita Williams Garcia, because it's set in Oakland.
I love the diary, the absolutely true diary of a part-time Indian by Sherman Alexie. Listen to it on audio if you can, with your teenagers in the car. It's great. And classic Bud Not Buddy, Christopher Paul Curtis, a brown boy on an adventure. Really exciting book.
Skim by Jillian Tamaki, great book about a young Asian American girl. And I was also going to say the Alexia Sherman book, but also Persepolis by Marjane Satrapi, my favorite.
And Christopher Myers?
Oh, goodness. I think that you guys already took mine. especially Skim, especially Sherman Alexie, especially Zuzi Morales. And it's in the end, I just think that We're getting close to a time where we need to make an adjustment. It's as if we all needed like Feldenkrais or one of those things. We need to make an adjustment in the industry, and it's up to us, the parents, the teachers, the librarians, to make that change, and we're excited to do it.
We were joined this hour by Nina Lindsay, the supervising librarian for children's services at Oakland Public Library, Mitali Perkins, the author of children's and young adults books featuring Southeast Asian characters, Lewin Pham, a children's book illustrator whose book includes Alvin Ho, series of books, and Grace for President, and Christopher Myers, a children's book illustrator who joined us from New York. Thank you all so much for being part of the program. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Nina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.